This is Jim Inkster. Coming today on the show, we will visit with baseball great Dennis Dale McLean, the last man to win 30 games in a major league season in 1968. Denny McLean will comment on the travails of Alex Rodriguez. 654 home runs for A-Rod, but he's unlikely to be in the Hall of Fame, and he may not play in the majors again, certainly not in 2014. We'll talk about it. Also, David Agus, a physician and professor at the University of Southern California, who has another best-selling book, A Short Guide to a Long Life. And we look forward to joining you today on the 85th birthday of Martin Luther King, the 81st birthday of Ernest James Gaines, and the 35th birthday of Drew Brees. Now the news. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. 297-5633 is your number outside the area. It is 877-217-5757. You may reach us by email, inkstershow@wrkf.org. It was 5 years ago at about this time that I was starting an interview with Ann Coulter on this show, and shortly thereafter, Ann Coulter hung up the phone. She was not pleased with the questions from the host on his birthday 5 years ago. So today is my birthday, and more importantly, it is the birthday of Dr. Martin Luther King and Ernest James Gaines, two great Americans born not so far apart. Ernest Gaines born in 1933 on this date, and Martin Luther King born on this date in 1929. Martin Luther King would be 85 years old if he had lived a natural life, and he might very well be alive and well, but of course he was shot down at the age of 39 in Memphis, April 4th, 1968. His speech, the I Have a Dream speech in 1963, regarded by many as the greatest speech ever by any politician or pundit or religious leader. You name it, it is one for the ages, and at this time, on this date, I think it's important to remember Martin Luther King, August 28th, 1963.
Poor little children will one day live in a nation where they will not be judged by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character. I have a dream today.
That was Martin Luther King, 1963, almost 51 years ago now. And he was only 39 when he was killed by James Earl Ray in Memphis. But it might not be that well known, it probably isn't, that in 1958, Dr. Martin Luther King was nearly stabbed to death in New York City. And it was at a book signing, of all places. In September of 1958, a 7-inch wound near his aorta. The doctor who saved his life died at the age of 95 last month, Dr. John Cordyce. And he noted that if Dr. King had as much as coughed, that he would have died. Fortunately, nobody tried to remove the letter opener that went into Dr. King, but he survived that in 1958, lived almost 10 years later, and unfortunately for all of us, he was killed on April 4th, 1968. January 15th, 1933 brought the birth of Ernest James Gaines, one of the great writers of any time, who was born in Pointe-Coupee Parish and still resides there. He moved back after many years in California. And he and his wife, Diane, I hope are listening this morning, but it started for Ernest James Gaines in 1964 with Catherine Carmier, and he continues to write, as he does and few others have, to this day, and we're glad to have Ernest Gaines in our midst. And it is also the birthday of Drew Brees, the Saints quarterback, certainly the greatest Saint of them all, born on this date in 1979. He is 35 years old. And as we segue to sports, the biggest story in the sporting world nationally this week has been the suspension of Alex Rodriguez, the baseball great with 654 career home runs, who has been put on the sidelines for 1 year by an arbitrator. Baseball had tried to suspend Rodriguez for 211 games. It's a 162-game suspension, and Alex Rodriguez will not play this year, it looks like. He is appealing in the court system, but it would be unprecedented for a decision of this kind to be overturned. With us to talk about it is the great Denny McClain, who in 1968 thrilled the world, won the Cy Young Award, the Most Valuable Player Award in the American League, and the Tigers of Detroit won the world title, beating the St. Louis Cardinals in the World Series in seven games. Denny McClain, good morning to you.
Good morning, my friend. How are you?
Doing well. What's your assessment of the Rodriguez suspension?
Well, you know, I hate to see anybody become the poster child for anything. He has certainly done an awful lot of damage to himself, and certainly he is, I don't blame him for the majority of this stuff. I mean, this stuff's been around a long time before he got to the big leagues. He had so much money, he was able to develop his own chemist and his own chemicals in order to try to perform better. And, of course, as we heard in that CBS interview on 60 Minutes, that he was trying to be the only one in the 800 club. And who knows, maybe he would have been had he not been caught and what have you. But, see, baseball, just a little bit of history. Back in the early 90s, when baseball was suffering from that crazy strike they went out on, which was the biggest mistake the sport made, and you know, the hockey guys never learned anything from it. A lot of people still haven't gone back to hockey. And lo and behold, they go out for that long period of time for baseball. The playoffs were canceled, et cetera. And then the bottom line was that they learned nothing. And so baseball had to figure out something in order to get the fans in the stands again. So baseball knew for a long time these steroids and these other drugs and these other chemicals were a part of the game. There wasn't this huge outcry when cocaine was running all the ball clubs there in the late 70s through the middle, late 80s. There wasn't any of that outcry then. They weren't having the FBI investigate everybody back then. But all of a sudden we get this thing going on with, besides A-Rod, McGuire and guys like that hitting home run after home run after home run. And all of a sudden, guess what happens? The people come back in the stands. The people want to buy the $8 beers and the $10 beers and $10 hot dogs, for God's sakes. Whoever thought we'd see a $10 hot dog? And all of the other things that went along with it, we started seeing billion-dollar built parks. But that was because of what happened in the 90s when people went back to the ballpark. People got hooked on the great game again, and it is the greatest game of all. There is no other game that approaches the momentum and the strategy and the excitement of it. And you got to remember, we play 162 games a year plus the playoffs, so keeping somebody's attention for that long is a very dramatic, successful program. So when they find out about all these drugs that are running around, and certainly they knew some of them before, they just decided to look the other way because people were coming in. So shame on baseball for allowing it to get to the point that it became and still may well be very, very active. I mean, I hear from players as they go down to the ballpark from time to time during the year, there's something magical in the air again. And you know what that means. I mean, they found something else, and baseball will always be behind because the guys with all of the money, the players themselves, who want to be better players, in a sense, are going to find what they need to do what they want to do. I mean, how many guys have we seen get caught later who had hit 40 home runs the year, all of a sudden they go from 5 home runs to 40 home runs or 10 home runs to 45 home runs? I mean, McGuire looked like the Hulk. Roger Clemens looked like the Hulk. I mean, Barry Bonds looked like the Hulk. I mean, once they started using this stuff, their bodies were transformed into something we had never seen before. You can't do that working out, I guess. And I know a lot of guys in my area that work out with the weights and what have you, but they swear there's only one way you can get as big as they get at that period of time, and that is if you use the chemicals. But shame on baseball. They're better now. They're trying to fix the problem. They're sending a bigger message. But Jim, here's my biggest problem with all of it. A number of years ago, 6-7 years ago, there was a report that came out that named 108, didn't actually name the players, but there were 108 players, allegedly, that had been tested positive for the drugs. My problem with the Rodriguez thing is, if those 108 players weren't named, why should they crucify Rodriguez? And believe you me, I'm not defending them, not by any stretch. We played in the old days. You took a little cortisone, you took a couple of aspirins, and you went out and played. Of course, we were owned by the team. If you didn't play, they sent you the Timbuktu. So we had other reasons we had to play. But the bottom line is, I think had they done something right at that point in time with these 108 players, named every damn one of them, we would have not have had an Alex Rodriguez issue here 10 years later.
Now, he has admitted using steroids in the past.
Sure.
And so it's not his first rodeo. And when he was in Texas, when he had his three biggest years, he was using steroids. So
sure.
Some would say he's being punished as a habitual offender.
Well, you know, I don't know if that's the appropriate term, but despite the fact him saying that, and there may be numerous reasons for him saying that. On the other hand, they now, as we have found out through all of the hearings that they've gone through, all these guys, that in fact he's never been tested positive in any way by anyone at any time. Now, apparently he had it down to a science with his little chemist, this guy that we saw in 60 Minutes the other night, who, by the way, I thought came across very, very credible. I don't care what he made, how much money he made. I'm sure, you know, according to what we've read and we've heard, they had 26 full-time ex-FBI agents working on this. Man, that's an awful lot of resource, and that's an awful lot of money, which tells you how much money Major League Baseball has to be able to hire 26 guys at one time to go out all over the country and dig up the dirt. I still say if you're going to do this right and appropriate, tell us who the other 108 are, because there's a lot of those in the 108 are that are also going to be candidates for what? The biggest prize in Major League Baseball is the Hall of Fame. I want to know who the 108 were. You want to know. Everybody wants to know who the 108 were, so we don't put the wrong guy in the Hall of Fame. And yet, on the other hand, if we start talking about wrong guys in the Hall of Fame, Ty Cobb, head of the KKK in Georgia, for God's sakes. Dizzy Dean, the largest gambler in the history of Major League Baseball, put like 100 people in jail. All of these different people that were a part of various and sundry activities, lo and behold, they're in the Hall of Fame. So why all of a sudden do we have this self-righteous bunch of bastards, pardon my French, who call themselves writers, who are making it yes or no for some guys? It's wrong. You should only be judged. If you're going to use the Hall of Fame appropriately, then use the Hall of Fame in the appropriate manner. Put them in because of what they did on the field. Listen, look at the NFL. I can't remember his name right now, but the big receiver with the Dallas Cowboys.
Terrell Owens?
Oh, not only Owens, but did Owens get in the Hall of Fame?
No, not yet.
No, the other one.
Michael Irvin.
Michael Irvin. I mean, how many times did he get caught with coke? How many times did he test positive? I mean, it's more than two handfuls. Lo and behold, he gets voted in the Hall of Fame because of what he did on the field. You know, I mean, if you're going to draw distinctions and talk about, none of us have clean closets, none of us. The difference is our closets, in some cases, have been opened, and depending upon what you do for a living, it can become pretty dramatic.
297-5633, your number outside the area, 877-217-5757. The eloquent, articulate, and opinionated Denny McClain will be with us for a few more minutes to talk about baseball now, and Alex Rodriguez in a heap of trouble. Looks like he won't play this season. Cost him about $25 million. We'll talk more in 90 seconds. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. If you'd like to reach us online, inkstershow@wrkf.org works as well. Dennis Dale McLean is with us, the Cy Young Award winner in the American League, 1968-69, 31 games a winner in 1968. Nobody's come close since then. And it had been 34 years since Dizzy Dean had won 30 when Denny McLean won his 30 games. He is not in the Hall of Fame. Alex Rodriguez quite likely will never be in the Hall of Fame. And Barry Bonds, baseball's all-time leading home run hitter with 762 homers, quite likely will never be a Hall of Famer. Alex Rodriguez went to federal court Monday in Manhattan to try to halt his season-long doping suspension. And we're talking about the plight of A-Rod, who some say has gotten punishment that is long overdue, and others say that A-Rod has a point that he's the victim of a witch hunt and that he is being singled out. Bud Selig, the commissioner of baseball, obviously does not like A-Rod, and he, on the 60 Minutes report this past Sunday, went so far as to say Alex Rodriguez went places that nobody has ever gone to try to avoid detection. Do you think that's true, Denny McLean?
Yeah, I think it's true. I mean, listen, with the kind of money that he's made over his career and all the other endorsements that he's received, and we're talking here, I mean, I read an article the other day, and I don't believe a lot in the New York papers, but if you just believe half of what he's made off the field, they say he's made about $300 million off the field also, plus this $350 or $400 or $500 million he's made as a player. Listen, what he did wrong, to deny it, listen, everybody can say what they want to say when the moment when you're confronted. I mean, you have a basic right to plead, not plead, or do whatever. But the bottom line with him was he went way out of his way to try to circumvent the process, to try to block the process, to buy people off. And sooner or later we're going to hear all of those stories, the guys that he bribed and the guys that he paid off to stay out of this picture. Because remember this. For every time he took an injection, not only was the person who was with him either witnessing or giving him the injection, there's other players who had to know about the stuff who were a part of it, who had to be given injections also, who saw how successful he was with it, and they partook too, So the bottom line simply is, will that information come out? The only way we get all of it is if it ever goes to court, federal court. And you know, they say federal courts have a long history of honoring arbitration decisions. I don't know about this one because I think they can make a pretty good case on one hand for the way baseball put this full court press on a civil matter, a total civil matter, and then on the other hand, whereby they didn't put such a huge full court press on anybody else. Yet, despite that, all these other guys came out and said, yeah, I did it, I did it, I did it. Again, I get back to if one guy is being treated this way, let's treat everybody that way and give us the names of the other 108 guys. I mean, the other hand, guys that were given to us by innuendo at that point in time, and some pretty big names. I mean, there's still names being bantied around, some of the people who have just recently retired and or something else. But the bottom line is he did some horrible things, and I think the punishment may well fit the crime at this point in time, a complete season. But I would not be surprised if a judge issues an injunction and this thing is put aside for 90 days or 6 months, and lo and behold, Alex Rodriguez is the opening day third baseman in Yankee Stadium.
He hasn't played that well the last few years. So.
Well, that's what happens when you get old, partner.
Well, I don't care what he's taking. It's not working the way it did before. And
well, I'm not sure if he's taking anything right now except Wheaties in the morning and Wheaties at lunch and Wheaties for dinner, because I got a hunch he's probably the cleanest man walking around in America today.
Maybe that's why he's not playing as well.
Listen, I'm not going to go into details, but I know of a player in our Midwest area, for the lack of a better term, that had an awful problem with that stuff and took him almost all year to get off of it. And lo and behold, he started playing better at the end of the year because he finally got through the turmoils and the trials and trepidations that apparently when you take as much as this guy was taking, it really got him hooked and it took him that much longer. And all of a sudden he became a player again. So, you know, this stuff's still around. It's around in I don't know if it's around as much as it once was, but it certainly looks like to me that we still, when guys are still hitting home runs, let me give everybody a hint. When people are hitting home runs, rocket shots to the opposite field, a right-handed hitter hitting a ball to right center field, a left-handed hitter hitting it to the left center field. Folks, there's something wrong in Albuquerque. I'm telling you, that does not happen. Think about what great home run hitters. Ted Williams, the greatest hitter probably the game has ever seen, never hit a home run to left center. All of the home runs Ted Williams hit for the 99% were to right field. He never hit one to left center. And think about a guy who could have hit home runs in left field in Boston playing in that ballpark if Ted had ever decided to go the other way. What I suggest to you, he just wasn't strong enough to make that swing go that way and still had to stay within himself. So the bottom line simply is, don't tell me it's still not there.
Well, Frank DeFord, the sports writer who commentates for National Public Radio, a few years ago delivered a commentary saying, just let them use whatever they want.
The threat there, and this is, and I've had an experience with one of my children, one of my grandchildren, is that when the players are allowed to use it, the kids will start to use it. Therefore, and we all know that this stuff, if you take it long enough, at least according to the doctors I've read and heard about, this stuff can cause some lifelong issues once you quit using it or as you advance in age. And I don't want my 17-year-old grandchild using this stuff because it makes him a better player at 17, at 16. And the child I'm talking about was a great player. And when his grandfather found out about it, I swear to you, I was so disappointed. But he said, Pops, I want to be the player you want me to be. I said, Mark, I said, it's not about what I want you to be. It's what you're going to be. We don't need that kind of thing. And eventually he got off of it. But, man, I'll tell you, that was a real wake-up call. And that's what happens. They see Roger Clemens doing it. They see A-Rod doing it. They see you name them, and they've done it. The bottom line is the kids want to use it because they know they'll be better players. Because one other thing, there's no better life. I don't care if you're president. I don't care if you're a radio broadcaster. I don't care if you're Matt, whatever his name is on NBC, the king of morning television. I don't care what you are. There's no better lifestyle in the world than a Major League Baseball player. And when you're successful, it's that much better.
Well, Barry Bonds apparently started using this stuff after he saw what Sosa and McGuire were doing.
That's right.
Mike Schmidt said that if he were playing today, he would be using it.
Well, I suspect, and as honest as I can be, I suspect that what apparently part of some of this stuff had the ability to heal you quicker, to make your soreness go away quicker, and all the other things that a pitcher would have to put up with. And we pitched every fourth day. Keep that in mind. So it was a little bit more dramatic.
And you pitched nine innings.
And we pitched a lot of ball games, nine innings. But here's the point. I suspect if it was around, we may have used it. And I wish I could tell you, because I've never been kind of a guy that ever used anything much more than aspirin. But the bottom line simply is, I suspect at the end of my career, when I had literally severed my tendon, my rotator cuff in my right shoulder, and all the pain that I had at the time, I'm sure, because Lord knows I had some guy inject me with cortisone one day right in my spine. And I think I flew to 51,000 feet before I finally figured out I was in the process of dying. I mean, that's how crazy it became. I was doing anything to stay in the game, anything to regain my ability to play and get guys out. I mean, here I'm meeting a guy in 11 o'clock at night, and he's going to inject me with cortisone. And this was when I was with the Oakland Club at the end of my career. And he injects me in my spine. And when I told the doctor about it the next day, he says, he could have killed you. He could have paralyzed you. I says, how the hell do I know? All I want to do is pitch.
Huh. Jason asks if you've read the biography of Ted Williams written by Ben Bradley Jr., who was on this show a few weeks ago.
I have. I played for Ted Williams, and I've also made the statement that it was the most miserable year of my baseball career. On the other hand, I've never met a more true American hero than I did Ted Williams because of the two wars. He quit baseball and went and played and fought in wars, for God's sakes, at the height of his career. You can't ask any more from a man than what Ted Williams did when he was playing Major League Baseball. Ted was a, let me just say it kindly. He was a difficult to get along with man. If you could not hit 350, his favorite line was, "Read my book, you'll be a better hitter." And one day there was a guy by the name of Dick Billings who was my roommate with the Texas Rangers and the Washington Senators. And Dick said, "Listen, just because I read a medical book doesn't make me a doctor." And Ted says, "Well, it'll make you a hitter if you read my book." He says, "Ted, I've read it twice, and I'm still hitting 225. Dick Billings didn't play for another 45 days.
My goodness.
Yeah, I mean, that's all. Ted was a nasty guy. He was also entertaining. You know, I've been flying 45 years. Ted was a pilot, obviously, because that's when he went back to war both times, he flew as a fighter pilot. And those are the two, that's the big subject that he and I always could talk about, no matter how badly we were getting along. And, of course, we could talk about pitchers and hitters. He thought pitchers were the dumbest walking around pieces of meat in the world. And I said, no, you got that wrong. Look in the mirror. That's the dumbest guy in the world.
I'm sure he loved that.
Oh, he loved it. I'm telling you, he loved it.
Well, you said once he pulled Curt Flood from a game and Flood.
Let me tell you what he did to Curt Flood. It was the ugliest story I've seen in a long time, and I don't know if it was racism or not, but I suspect it could have been a little bit. Curt, of course, won 10 or 11, 12 Golden Gloves. He came over to Washington as a part of a deal that he wanted to play baseball again. He was going to help the Washington Senators, who were really floundering at the time. So he came the same year I did in Washington. We've got a couple-run lead. It's the fourth or fifth inning in a ball game. Remember now, 10 or 12 Golden Glove winner.
Yeah.
And Ted comes out of the dugout onto the middle of the field, and the umpire thought he was going to make a pitching change. So everybody did. Lo and behold, he comes out to almost the mound, picks up his left arm, and says, "Flood, come on in. We're going to make a move." And they sent out another center fielder for defensive purposes because Curt had said something to him between innings about hitting and something about sticking the book in a place where the sun don't shine. So Ted was not one to ever take any character assassination, for a lack of a term.
Well, I remember you saying that Flood said, "What are you doing?" And he said, "Why are you taking me out?" And he said, "Because I can."
That was the second part. That's right. He says, defensive purposes. And then when Flood got in the dugout, Flood says, "Why the hell would you take me out?" He says, "Because I can."
Yeah. Well, Ted Williams was a temperamental fellow.
I guess that's a kind way of saying, I won't say the word.
But do you think you were misunderstood?
Well, I don't know if I was misunderstood. Listen, I'm an Irish Catholic. How can I be misunderstood? We wear everything on our sleeves, don't we? I mean, we don't hold much back, and we don't tell many stories because we can't remember what we said the first time.
But when you poured water on a sports writer, that was a joke, right? But
total joke. But yeah, it was just a funny shtick, you know.
But you got suspended for it.
Certainly did get suspended for it. I suspended for it. I mean, I got suspended so quick, I hardly had time to take my uniform off. It was one of those things, you know, I had lured two writers down to the locker room before the game had started, and one guy took it as a joke, the way it was supposed to be taken. And because we were talking about his columns, and I kept making statements like, "Well, you know what, I'm tired of your columns. I'm using the paper now. I'm using the paper only for one reason. Because the paper is good for my bird. It looks real good on the bottom of the bird cage. It really does a great job." And I said, "On top of everything else, you're all wet. You've always been all wet." So as he starts to walk away, I have got this bucket of water covered with towels in my locker. So he takes about five or six steps. I walked up behind him, and I dumped it over his head. He turned around, and he called me a number of names. And I said, "Geez, it's 94 degrees outside. You should feel pretty good. This water's got to feel good." And although I had forgotten that it was hot water, too. And lo and behold, he went right to Jim Campbell's office, who was our president general manager at the time, and told him, "I want him suspended. He's this, he's that, he's this, he's that, he's this, he's that. He needs to be kicked out of the game." And Campbell said, "For throwing water at you?" He says, "Out of the game?" He says, "Well, at least suspend him." And he said, all right, I'll suspend him. Lo and behold, I got suspended for 3 days, and then, of course, I get a phone call, and then I was suspended for the rest of the year. And then they made me take a psychiatric test. I don't know if anybody knows this, but they sent me to Ford Hospital for a 3-day evaluation. Me, an Irish Catholic, all screwed up to begin with, right?
Yeah.
And my mother was a Polish Jew. So I'm really in a mixed-up house with an Irish Catholic father and a Polish Jew for a mother. And lo and behold, after 3 days at the Ford facility here in Detroit, they let me go, and they said, well, we're pleased to tell you that you're as sane as anybody we've ever had. I said, I could have told you that before I got here. He says, well, the thing that really got us was you're the first person that we ever had. They put me in a sterile white room, Jim, and in this room they gave me a puzzle to put together. And after about 30 seconds, it became real apparent to me these pieces could never go together. It's incredibly stupid to put. Why would you do this? And lo and behold, he says, that's the reason you're getting the hell out of here. He says, you recognize it within 30 seconds. And he says, normally, if anybody, he says, most people take 5-10 minutes before. And I says, well, thank God. I said, because, you know, the closer I look, the more those parts look like they would fit.
Casey asked you to name the greatest player you ever played with.
The greatest player I ever played with, Al Kaline, no question about it. I saw him play. He was the greatest player I ever saw do all the things that he needed to do to win a ball game. The guy could manufacture a single, could manufacture a double or a home run. He knew how to play. He was a quiet guy, which I guess could be the only criticism I could throw at him. Because if he was that big, staunchy, blow-it-up-in-your-face type of guy, he would have been more remarkable in a sense that people would have recognized his greatness. Now, the greatest player I ever saw, and I didn't see him, obviously, as much as I would have. He was my idol growing up, and maybe I'm a little prejudiced. But the greatest player I ever saw, because he did it from the left side and the right side and played in the greatest show in the world, was the New York Yankees, Mickey Mantle. I mean, that's my guy. It still is my guy. And I think about Mickey every day for the great memories that he's left all of us. And it's he is the guy. I mean, he represented the game in the late 50s and 60s. He kept people in the seats. He did the things that needed to be done. And, you know, when a guy puts a uniform on, he either looks like he belongs in it or he doesn't. He looked like he belonged in that uniform, much like Kaline.
He did. Chiseled. Imagine what he would have looked like with steroids.
My God, I didn't think about
yeah,
that.
Yeah, but he hit 536 home runs, and you gave up 535. And
I did, indeed.
There's quite a story behind that. That
yeah,
I don't
well,
think
I'll
you've
have to
told
buy
the whole
for that one.
But he hit a very long home run as home run number 535. I think that was win number 31 for you.
And let me tell you what else I have. I just got about a month ago, almost a month ago, some guy walked up who got the exact moment he hit the home run for 535. He's got Mantle swinging. He's got Mantle rounding. You see the actual pitch come off the bat. You see him going to first base. Then you see him being congratulated at home plate by the Yankee players, and then some other pictures come right behind it. It is amazing historical stuff.
Well, Denny, thank you, and always a pleasure.
And Jim, it's always a pleasure to talk to you. Anytime, you got the number, and quick call and collect.
There you go. Thank you. Dennis
thank you,
Dale McClain, back in 90 seconds. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. Michael Farrar producing, and our guest is Dr. David B. Agus. He is one of the world's leading cancer doctors and a pioneering biomedical researcher. He's at the University of Southern California as a professor of medicine and engineering, and he is the author of the New York Times number one bestseller, The End of Illness, and his newest book is number two on the bestselling list right now, A Short Guide to a Long Life. Good morning, Dr. Agus.
Oh, good morning. Thank you so much for having me.
Well, it's nice to talk with you, and you have some thoughts that perhaps are unconventional. You were certainly immersed in the medical field, but among the things that you say can harm our health, vitamins and supplements, why?
Well, it's not I'm saying that. The data say that. I mean, so the data clearly show in 65 randomized studies, vitamins and supplements have never in the history of mankind showed a benefit ever. And yet in some of the studies, they caused harm. Men who took vitamin E increased prostate cancer. Women who took high-dose vitamin D increased bone fracture in the elderly. Smokers and former smokers who took beta-carotene and vitamin A dramatically higher lung cancer rates. No benefit, potential harm. Why are we doing it? Save the money.
297-5633. If you'd like to talk to the provocative guest, the number one best-selling author, Dr. David Agus. You also are against juicing. Jack LaLanne was a big advocate. It seemed to work for him for 96 years. Why shouldn't it work for the rest of us?
Well, as soon as you put a fruit or a vegetable into a blender, they get oxidized and they degrade right away. You just get a big bolus of sugar. So there are going to be exceptions like the Jack LaLanne's of the world, but in the collective group, in all of us, it's not a good thing to do. Eat the real food. The shortcuts don't work.
Detoxing. You're not a big fan of detoxing.
Well, there's no such thing. Our liver is our detox organism and organ. And what it does is it takes things out of the blood that can cause a problem. There is no medicine or pill or anything that can do that. So the notion of a detox just makes no scientific sense.
One other thing that Dr. Agus says to stay away from, and I don't know how we can do it, these airport X-ray scanners. What potential dangers are there from those?
Well, I don't know of any potential danger, but I know is that historically, whenever we bring on a new technology with not outcome data, we've been the wrong thing. In the 50s, we put our feet into those boxes to see if our shoes fit. Caused a lot of cancer of the feet. So there's new technology, this backscatter where you hold up your arm.
Yeah.
We don't have long-term outcome data. So I go and I say, listen, I want a free massage. I get a pat-down and then I go to the gate because I'm not going to go through a technology without outcome data because most of the time we've been wrong when we've guessed.
Well, some of us fly regularly and you know, maybe 20 times last year I had one of those scans. Am I in danger?
We don't know. I mean, and so I'm not willing to take that risk when I don't know. And so, I go through either the other scanner where you can walk right through, or I get the pat-down because we've been wrong many times. Remember, 30 years ago, we told people to have margarine, not butter. And again, without any data, and we caused heart disease by doing that. We're very good at these declaratory statements without data. We got to think twice here.
You say you can request the pat-down and avoid these scanners?
Everybody has a right to what we call opt-out. So you could say, listen, I don't want to go through a technology without data, and they will pat down, make sure you have no harmful devices on you, and you go on your way to your gate.
Okay. A lot of people in this community, and I suspect everywhere, they're having flu issues right now. We've got it in the office here right now. Now, you say you should get an annual flu shot even if you never get sick and have never gotten the flu. Why?
So, the flu shot works. Only 40% of people in our country this year have gotten the flu. It's turning out to be a pretty bad season with swine flu or H1N1 as the dominant strain. If you skipped the flu shot and got the flu, most people survive, although 40,000 did die last year in the United States. But a decade from now, because of that flu, your rate of heart disease and cancer are elevated. The flu causes all this inflammation in the body, which has its manifestations 10 years down the road. So all of us need to say, listen, I want to prevent that and get that flu shot. Flu shot cannot cause the flu. It causes a little discomfort in the arm, but that's it. It is a tremendous public health advance.
And
it's not too late to get this year, by the way.
No, it's not. It's not. Baby aspirin. You like baby aspirin. Why?
Well, it's not me. It's that the data point that direction. Is that if you took a baby aspirin a day over the age of 40, you reduced not the incidence, but the death rate of cancer by 37%, heart disease by 22%, and stroke by 17%. So I'm not telling anyone to take the pill, but I want you to have the discussion with your doctor and say, why aren't I on one? I want to move the conversations where the doctor makes a decision in a closed door, having a conversation with you to make the right decision based on your value system and your family history.
Statins. I started taking statins in my 30s, and long-term, am I in danger for having done so?
Not that we know of. Statins is a remarkable public advance that blocks inflammation. That's the mechanism how they work. They work in most people. They delay heart attack and stroke, decrease the death rate of cancer. At the same time, there are side effects in a small number of people. They're reversible. So if you have one, you stop, and it goes away in a couple of days. And the side effects are rare, predominantly muscle aches, But in most people, they're a tremendous way to allow us to prevent disease and live longer.
We're talking to Dr. David Agus. His latest book is A Short Guide to a Long Life, now number 2 on the best-selling list. I drink a lot of coffee a day. I've switched to decaf for most of the day, but still have a lot of caffeine intake in the mornings. You say we should start a sensible caffeine habit. Why?
Well, the data shows that up to 3 cups a day has a health benefit, allows you to focus better, too, and perform better. Over 3 cups, you start to have that decline. And in the end, there starts to be harm. Stay away from the energy drinks or those shots. You know, you're made to have caffeine over time. You drink a cup of coffee over a half hour or 45 minutes, so you slowly absorb that caffeine. And do the same amount every day. We all know what it feels like to do it 2 days on, 1 day off. You don't feel good. So try to do the same amount every day, max of 3 cups, and do it with real coffee or tea. Avoid the shots or the drinks you buy at the store.
What are some of the simple things we can do to live a healthier life?
Well, the simplest by far is movement. So our bodies were designed to move, and movement over time is the key. You do that hour at the gym, it's awesome, but you then sit for 5 hours a day, it's equivalent on a health basis to smoking a pack of cigarettes. And so movement over time, every half hour, get up and walk for a couple of minutes. Will work. The other major thing is regularity and schedule. It's not just what you eat, it's when you eat. So try to eat your meals the same time every day with nothing in between. That snack, randomly or when you're hungry, grazing we call it, increases diabetes by 81%. So the key is eat your meals same time every day, get up and go to bed the same time every day, and movement over time.
The book, the latest one from Dr. Agus, A Short Guide to a Long Life, has 65 areas where we can improve, and one of the areas, I can't go through all 65, but I'll go through a few. Consider DNA testing. Why should we do this?
Well, the more you know, the better. It's an old adage, with enough data, error goes away. And so looking at your DNA can tell you what may happen in your life. It tells you where to focus. It allows you to start to personalize things. This is a technology that's slowly coming into its own. And over the next 2 to 3 to 4 years, will become much more commonplace. You get a cholesterol value, it tells you your risk of heart disease. Going forward, we'll add to that DNA.
What if we get bad news?
Then we act on it. Everything you're going to learn, you can delay or prevent. And so, and the thing, you want to be in charge. You want to know where to put your, whether it be raising money for research, whether it be preventing something, or whether it be a behavior changes, you want to be in charge.
Now, you're a cancer specialist. So how much cancer is caused by heredity, and how much is caused by environment and lifestyle?
Our estimate is about 50-50, and so you can only blame your parents for part. 50%, your lifestyle, your behavior, you're in charge of, and that's what we need to take control over.
50% is avoidable, and of course, smoking remains one of the great culprits as far as people getting different types of cancer. And despite all the information, all the wisdom that is imparted on these shows and others, about 20% of Americans still smoke?
No question about it. 18% of kids in high school still smoke. And we need to stop that. You know, in California, which is one of the lowest smoking rates, 26% of our health care costs are tobacco-related. And so we're all paying the price. The bottom line is non-smokers are subsidizing smokers. And so we all need to come together and say, listen, we need to change health in our country. It is a runaway train. The way we do it is to stop talking about healthcare finance, which we've talked about for the last decade, and start to talk about health.
You say never, never skip breakfast.
Listen, breakfast.
Why should we never skip breakfast?
Your body needs that nutrients in order to perform optimally. So having a good breakfast will allow you to achieve what you want to achieve. Have a good breakfast, good protein, good fats. It's great.
Here's a question for Dr. Agus, Dubuque. My vitamin D levels were low. My mother has osteoporosis. I've been taking 1,000 U of vitamin D per day. Is that dangerous?
Well, the data show is that taking supplemental vitamin D do not help rate of bone fracture at all. So osteoporosis is not a deficiency in calcium and vitamin D. It actually is a genetic disorder that was selected for it because it's easier for the head of a child to go through the pelvis with lower bone density. That being said, right now 97% of African Americans and 80% of Caucasians are, quote, low in vitamin D in our country. So first of all, who defined what normal was? So the key is eat some cold water fish, get some sunshine. Don't do it from a pill because there is no benefit, only side effects from taking calcium and vitamin D.
All right. 297-5633, Scott in Opelousas for Dr. David Agus. Scott, good morning.
Good morning, Jim. Good morning. Of course, I'm in Louisiana. A lot of people work, a lot of shift work around here. What is your advice? Like you said, do regular, go to bed and eat at the same time. Working shift work, opposite shifts, days and nights. What are your advice for excessive shift work, which we're going to work, a lot of times? Thank you.
You know, it's really hard. Shift work clearly increases one's risk for disease. We know that. So as much as possible, you can lump your shifts together. That is, stay on the night shift for a week or 2 weeks at a time, then shift to the day shift. That's better than alternating on a daily basis. And even if you're on shift work, you could try to make your meals as regular as possible. Try to stick to those three meals different times at the same times of the day, no matter your shift work. So try where you can. But you're right. Sometimes with our profession, it makes it really hard.
Some other questions. What about fish oils?
Well, I mean, cold water fish work. And so everybody tries to make a buck on it, so they convert it to fish oils. There's yet to be a study in the history of mankind showing a benefit to taking fish oil capsules. If you have a fisherman, you get a beautiful fish, you sell it to the fish store for $20 a pound. You get an ugly-looking degraded fish, you give it to the fish oil company. Eat the real food. You know, 1 4-ounce serving of salmon equals 11 fish oil capsules.
One serving.
That's it.
All right. How about glucosamine?
Well, glucosamine and chondroitin were hypothesized to help joint pain. And in 4 randomized studies, they did not show a benefit. So if it works in you, it's one thing. You may want to try it for a week. If it doesn't help your joint, stop it. But in the collective population, it didn't work.
297-5633, Mike in South Downs. Mike, you're on with Dr. Agus. Hi, Mike.
Hi. Dr. Agus, there were some things I'd read about the use of Tagamet for heart problems or heart attack. Would you make any comments on that if you're familiar with it?
Well, I think what you're referring to is that sometimes when acid in the stomach goes into the esophagus, it causes pain that a lot of times people think is related to the heart. And there are drugs like Prilosec, Prevacid that block the secretion of acid that can help. And so if you do that and the symptoms go away, and it's obviously not your heart, it's your stomach. And so the key is we got to all know our body. You know, one of the things in the book I tell people is I want you to get naked once a month and stand in front of the mirror and look at any change in your body. Your doctor sees you once a year. You can see the changes on a daily basis. But, you know, you need to know yourself. If you start having pains in the chest, that's something we worry about and could certainly be heart disease, and you need to have it checked out.
You say it's essential to maintain good posture. What does that do?
Well, you know, my mother and most mothers were screaming at me as a kid, sit up straight. When you have or hunched over in that C shape, if you will, you don't breathe as deeply, so you're not going to clear your lungs. You can get more infections of the lungs. And it also, over time, can affect your circulatory system, your heart. So the key is sit up straight. It will have an effect on your body. You feel better when you do it.
297-5633 for Dr. David Agus. Michael, can you give me the next person, please? It is Tyler in Prairieville. Tyler, good morning. You're on with Dr. Agus.
Yes. Dr. Agus, what do you have to say about the role of genetics and epigenetics? And also, I would like to ask you how you feel about the increasing use amongst college kids with stimulants.
Stimulants and genetics.
Okay, so genetics, you know, if you're in front of 2 Chinese restaurants and look at the ingredient list, they're exactly the same. You taste the food, one could be great and one could be poor. Well, genetics are your ingredient list. It is a piece to the puzzle. It's not everything, it's a small piece to the puzzle. Epigenetics are changes in genes that happen over time, mm-hmm. and we're still learning to understand that. Stimulants are scary. Is that, you know, we're made to have that cup of coffee. When you drink a cup of coffee, you do it over 30, 45 minutes. When you take that 5-hour energy shot or you take a pill, it's all the caffeine at once, and it can cause heart problems and end up in the emergency room. So we need to be very cautious and educate our kids. There have been hundreds of deaths from these over the last years, and we really need to have concern here and really do it through education.
Quelly in Scotlandville. Hi, Quelly.
Good morning, gentlemen. How are you?
Fine.
Good morning.
Great, great. I wanted to ask, I have type 2 diabetes, and I'm concerned about the long-term effect of taking the medicine that I have to take in order.
All right, we're short, but what about medicine for diabetes?
The medicine for diabetes works. Every year your sugar is elevated. That's an extra year of aging on your blood vessels. At the same time, we can start to work through diet and lifestyle changes and behavior changes to try to reduce diabetes. You know, eat your meals on a regular schedule. Walk and movement both help dramatically with diabetes. So take the medicine in the short run, but the hope is some of these changes may take away the need for the medicine.
A short guide to a long life from Dr. David B. Agus. We're very short on time, but Mark asked the question, if you can give it in 5 seconds, testosterone, is that a good idea?
In the largest randomized study of what we call big data, 320 million prescriptions last year, testosterone increased heart attack and death rate in people with low testosterone. So the answer is no.
All right, we're short, but thank you, Dr. Agus. Congratulations on another bestseller. We'll be back tomorrow. Stay tuned.
Podcasts of The Jim Engster Show are available at WRKF.org. The Jim Engster Show is produced in association with the Louisiana Radio Network and is copyrighted by WRKF for the private use of its audience. Any other use of any portion of this program without the written consent of WRKF is prohibited. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect the views of WRKF, its officers, and members.